recruiting animal here, March 25, 2009. And friends, today I want to talk about customer service. Don't think I've ever mentioned that before. Now, I have a friend I want to tell you about first. He used to talk about his family all the time, and his family was pretty darn awful. The father was an ogre. The mother had no maternal feelings at all. And the kids, the siblings, they don't talk to each other like for 10 or 20 years. So once I was at this guy's house, and I said to him, just in conversation, if your family is as bad as you say they are, you had a really tough situation when you were growing up. And you know what he said to me? He said, what do you mean if they're as bad as I say? And I said, well, look, I'm only getting your point of view. I don't know how things really were. I'm trying to be fair. And he said, you take that back or I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And I said, hey, I'm only trying to be fair. But that wasn't good enough for him. He said, take it back or get out. So you know what? I was confused. I didn't know what to do. I took it back. But later on, when I thought about it, I said, hey, this is crazy. And if this ever happened again, I would just get up and leave. So then, that was a few years ago. A couple of weeks ago, I was out to dinner with a bunch of guys, and one guy said that he had some reservations about the girl that his son was going out with. So he was going to speak to him about it. So this guy with the awful family, he was there, and he said, hey, you can't do that. Your son doesn't want to hear from you about his girlfriend. So I piped in. I said, listen, maybe this kid has a good relationship with his dad. That's something you don't know anything about because you didn't have that. You can't imagine it. And he said to me, you know what he said? He said, you take that back. I love my father. So I said, look, you've been reconciled with your dad for a few years, but you weren't on good terms with him when you were growing up. And he said, take it back, take it back. I love my daddy. So what did I say? I said, okay, I must have misunderstood. You see, friends, I learned something over the years. This guy is absolutely crazy about his family, and I'm never going to change him, so why should I fight with him? If he wants to be crazy, what do I care? And you know what? Some recruiters operate the same way. They use the same principle. I'm almost done. Most of the story was about me. I'm just adding this stuff about the recruiters on. But I was reading an article on Fordyce Letter Network last week, and this recruiter had a candidate who was really, really mad at him because the recruiter had a deal going through, and I guess he just mentioned it to this candidate who was apparently a new candidate that he was making this placement, and the guy insisted that he insert him into that placement process. I guess he wanted him to send him out for an interview, and the recruiter said, hey, this deal's pretty well closed, and the candidate started to get mad and verbally abusive. So, you know, what did the recruiter do? Did he fight back? Did he tell the guy he was a stupid jerk, an idiot? No, that's not what he said. As gently as he could, he said, son, I'm sorry, I can't help you on this one. And when the younger recruiters in the office asked him why he let that candidate be so bad, he said, boys, I pity that fool. He's so wild about getting a job that nothing I say is going to make him see any sense at all. So should I start banging my head against the wall, trying to make him understand right from wrong? Then I'd be crazy too. Wouldn't I? And that's the way you deal with crazy people. That's what I wanted to tell you. You let them say whatever kind of kooky things they want and just hope that someday there might be some kind of new medicine that gives them a fully loaded brain. Now, how do you deal with your crazy candidates? You can call in and let us know. But in the meantime, I'm going to turn to Julia Stone, because she's the guest for today on the Recruiting Animal Show! fast. Julia Stone, are you there?
Hi, Animal. It's Julia.
Hi, Animal. It's Julia. I thought you'd sound a little more forceful, Julia. I haven't spoken to you recently.
Anything else to say about that? I loved your introduction. I wondered where you were going with the crazy people. I'm glad you brought it back around to the candidates at the
end. Okay. Well, we know lots of crazy people. We could talk about a million. But we're recruiters, Julia.
We want
to talk about candidates. But first, I'm going to chit-chat about some intro stuff. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
I was reading your blog, and it said, your blog on recruitingblogs.com, and it said, who invited you to recruiting blogs? And you said Rob McIntosh, Shally's old boss at Microsoft. How do you know Rob?
I've known Rob for several years. I originally met him at SourceCon.
Oh, so you just happen to know him in passing, right?
No, I know him pretty well.
Okay. Now, you had another article there. Are you with me?
I'm right here.
It's very quiet. I know there's some people here, but we'll introduce them later on. Let me just open it up for a few more.
I wanted to discuss your opinion.
Who's talking there? That's me talking. Julia, I read your blog, and you asked a question. Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
We can all hear you.
Can you understand what I'm saying?
Animal?
Yeah.
You got to close the lines because someone's got their computer speakers on, and that's what the echo is.
Oh, yeah, that's what started just when I opened it up. You are so smart. Okay, I think that guy's gone. Yeah, he went off himself. Some jerk. Thank you. Thank you for handling him for me. Some crazy person. Okay, Julie, are you still there? That wasn't you who hung up, right?
Not at all.
Okay, you said on your blog, you've got an article about women, and you ask if you ask people if they'd rather have a woman work in an office, rather, of all women or all men. Am I right?
I did ask that question.
Yeah, and Rayanne said most women have too many personal issues that get in the way of business. And Sandy McCart agreed. She said men don't feel the same need to talk about the fights they have with their wives or about which kid threw up in the back seat, and they don't feel the need to rush to HR to snitch on someone who's swearing. Right?
Correct.
But Rayanne also makes a point that there's a certain kind of woman, she calls her a dame, I wouldn't call her that, who isn't so delicate. And I remember you saying a few weeks ago on this show that you are put off by people who cry at work. So, Julia Stone, are you Rayanne's kind of woman?
Absolutely.
So, there's a sissified kind of woman and a your kind of woman. Am I right?
Maybe. I wouldn't cry.
Okay, next thing. Is this a cultural issue or a biological issue?
Oh, both.
Okay, you know, this isn't turning you on. You wrote about it, but I can't get you going.
I just like to stir the pot. I just found it interesting. I don't think it's ever healthy to have an all-anything environment.
Why is that, dear? Why don't you tell us, since that's what you want to talk about?
Is that what I want to talk about?
It sounds like it.
I think it's much healthier. I think you have a lot more free flow of information if you have a natural blend of sexes and cultures in the workplace.
Well, let's bring the gender police on this one. Maureen, do you agree with her on that? Bad to have an all-woman office?
Is it bad to have an all-woman office? Probably.
Yeah? Anybody else got a comment?
Nobody
there. It's bad to have all men, by the way. You just weren't really listening.
I'd rather work in an all-woman office.
I'd rather work in an all-male office.
But then it wouldn't be all women by name.
How about mostly hot women?
Okay,
let's not pick.
Slow it down. I screwed it up at the beginning, but I do want to run through. She had a couple of postings. I thought maybe you'd turn her on by starting out with stuff she's interested in. You said condominium sales are up because the economy's down?
No, it's because we lost 20% of our value.
No. Jimmy! She said, here's what she really said. She said condom sales are up.
Oh.
I was giving her a chance. She died on me. You know, I got to tell you, Lucy Feliciano, she's listening right now. She sent me a note. She's from Puerto Rico. She sent me a note on Twitter. And I said, she said, have a good show. And I said, you know, Julia Stone's a very chatty person. I hope she doesn't clam up on me when she gets on the air. Julia, that's what you're doing.
All right. I'm clamming up.
Tell us about your business. Go ahead.
BizWorks? Direct hire search firm.
Your business is called BizWorks. BizWerks.com, right?
German spelling, German work ethic. That's right.
Hey, go ahead.
What? German?
I don't know. She's living in Germany, and we're in North America.
They got 20% or what, 10% unemployment. What type of work ethic is that?
Go ahead. Let her explain.
Not the American Germans up here. We're in my town here in Madison, Wisconsin, we're hitting still around 4% unemployment.
That's because you have so many ACORN members working for the university.
It's all government. Government's hiring.
Yeah, there is a lot of government. You got a point.
Okay, boy, you're really a ball of energy today there, Julia. Okay, you don't want to talk about your business. How did you become a recruiter? Why don't you tell us that?
Well, that's a good story, Animal. I was selling
toilet
paper.
Let me ask you something. Did you have a bad morning? You told me you were meeting with the mayor this morning.
I did. I had a big, crappy breakfast at 7 o'clock, and I'm not a morning person.
It wasn't good, and you're taking it out on me. Is
no,
that
it was
what's
awesome.
Happening?
It was awesome, and I had two coffees in between, so I'm trying, okay?
And you're exhausted, and that's what you left for us. Nothing.
Too many carbs.
She's an empty tank right now.
These eggs and issues, guys. Protein, I promise. Anyway.
Okay, so start talking, or I'm going to have to go to the gallery for a while. Go ahead. Tell us, how did you become a recruiter?
Okay. I got bored with my job. I took on a second
job.
I was selling toilet paper.
Really?
Good
yeah.
money.
You know what, Jason Davis used to do the same thing, and he made a lot of money at it.
And I was doing – well, that's because I was selling toilet paper to the crabbing boats up in Alaska, like on the Deadliest Catch. I was doing that kind of stuff, and it was highly entertaining dealing with the Russian soldiers and all. But there's only so many technological advancements in toilet paper. I mean, there was
Were they using the good stuff, though, up there on those crab boats?
Yeah.
I mean –
they can't because of the heads, you know. I mean, you have the one ply with the peel, you know, the one ply with the feel of two ply, but that's the only thing that's happened in 25 years in the industry. So,
like our RV toilet paper, like we have to use in our camper. Then,
yeah, exactly, same thing. So I got bored with it.
I remember a Seinfeld episode about that. That they talked about all the changes in one ply, two ply, soft.
Yeah.
The name, pictures on it.
Let's get. Julia, just talk a little faster, okay? Pretend you're happy to be here, will you?
Toilet paper is the one thing we all have in common.
All right. So I took on a part-time job at a scuba diving store because I was getting bored and ran into a high-level project manager from Microsoft. And I sold him a bunch of scuba diving equipment for his honeymoon, he got me into recruiting. So that's how I ended up in recruiting.
He got you into recruiting? Like, how did he get you into recruiting?
We had a lot of talks. I said I was bored when I was learning. I had done some systems administration work after I sold the toilet paper, and it was boring. It was fun learning, but it was really boring doing the work, and I was dying to talk to people, but at the same time, selling something like toilet paper.
You know, you don't tell a good story. I mean, the systems administration, you did some IT stuff, so you had some background. Is IT, and you just left that out, right? We were trying to get from toilet paper to Microsoft.
I got bored selling toilet paper, so I started breaking the systems
question.
All the time.
Okay, I'm going to take control now, okay? Now, you said to me in an email, you said, I don't think I'm terribly different from Jerry Albright in my recruiting philosophy. He's right here. What did you mean by that?
Jerry and I have had a lot of talks about recruiting, and I think that he and I have a lot of the same philosophy.
Yeah, spell it out. We know already that you agree with him. What do you mean?
Metrics, numbers, types of you know, I kind of believe you have to have one good candidate a day in order to succeed in this business, and I think he would agree with that.
One good candidate a day. What does that mean?
It means you have to have somebody to be able to send out to your clients at least one a day.
How do you get that one candidate a day?
Well, you talk to about 5 or 10.
How do you get to those 5 or 10 people?
Yeah, by sending out about 50 emails and calls to.
And where do you get those 50 people?
Well, you start with about 200 from another list, which then are weeded down.
Where do you originate your list? I'm talking about sourcing, okay? Where do you get the names ultimately? How do you get them? Telephone sourcing? Do you buy lists? How do you get those names?
We get a lot of our own names. We work a lot through groups, through existing client. You know, we do direct competitor infiltration of, you know, for our clients.
You know, that I like that. Maureen, don't you like that? Direct competitor infiltration. Don't you like it? She's gone. It's a little better than, it might have been her dog there.
Maureen, she's not going to stick around for this one.
Yeah, it's a little better than ethical elicitation, competitor infiltration. It's got,
I like to call it targeted infiltration.
You know, Jerry, is Jerry still here? Jerry Albright?
Too boring for Jerry, too.
Verbalsummary.com? Maybe the system conked and it's just you and me.
No, I'm here.
Who's that?
Luck.
Jim Durbin. Jim Durbin, socialmediaheadhunter.com. Is that you?
Yeah. I missed you guys. I called
in. I'm glad. Okay. Do you know Julia?
No, but she seems very funny.
Okay, yeah. She's supposed to be funny, but I don't notice it yet. Ask her
like
a question.
Like a clownfish.
You want to ask her a question, Jim? You got a question? I don't care what it is.
Sure. Got any decent jokes?
She's not a joke funny person.
A sensible. Okay, got it. Got it. No, I'm really more here to listen and, you know.
Okay.
Try to disrupt.
Okay. Julia, I'm going to switch then since it's hard. Although you told me you're very good at networking, so that must be one of the ways you get names. Am I right?
I do. I spend a lot of time networking.
Okay, what? Now tell us some of your networking secrets. Would you reveal them for people on the show today?
I would be happy to. It takes a lot of time and effort to network, and I don't think you can.
Look, I know you got a kid. I know you're tired, but just pretend you've got some energy on the show today. Will you do it for me? Don't sound like it's an effort to be here. It's killing me.
Okay.
Say, hey, just sound peppy. I love networking. It's a lot of work, but I got a real great payoff.
I have to scream to sound peppy compared to you.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
If you're too peppy, he tells you to stop talking because it's his show.
Okay.
Exactly.
You know what? I had an introduction about don't try to change people. They have their own ways, and here I'm breaking my own rules. Go ahead. You tell us in your own way about your networking activities.
Well, I do a lot of different things. I started out working in all technical circles, so I would go to every SQL Server meeting and every women in computing and anything you could think of. I've been involved in over the last 10 or 12 years. I've taken a different tack the last couple of years, and I've been getting more and more involved in the political community and, you know, moving things in that direction. So what it's done is allowed me to meet people in a little different fashion. The most successful networking I've had has been with VCs. You know, you get to know a few VCs, and all of a sudden your introductions take on a whole new meaning, and it's been really helpful for us through the last 2 years.
Want to give me an example?
Okay. I know a VC, and they introduce me to people, only they know the people who start the company, so I'm talking to companies at the CEO level when I go in.
You know what? That's not an example. An example means I met a venture capitalist, in case anybody doesn't know. We have a lot of beginners and people in foreign countries listening to this show. I have to explain. A VC is a venture capitalist. Now, Julia says she goes to a political meeting, and do you meet these venture capitalists there at these political meetings, Julia? Yes or no?
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So if there's a breakfast with the mayor that's open to the city, or anybody who wants to come. Mm-hmm. These guys come to that?
Yes.
Why?
Because they are also involved with politics. They're involved with the chamber. I do a lot of work with the chamber. In case you don't know, that's the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay, good.
I want to spell
it
out for you.
Thanks.
And
now, let me ask you something. It sounds to me like everybody at these political meetings is just a hustler who's using the politics as a vehicle for their own business. Is that true?
Yes.
Yep.
I wouldn't know. I'm too busy trying to hustle my own product.
Isn't that the definition of politics?
So they're there trying to do business with the city or something like that, or
they're on the board. They're on the board of the Chamber of Commerce, or on the board of some nonprofits, or on the board of, I don't know, you know, some of these startup companies that I work with.
Okay. And what makes you charming to them that they want to do business with you or that they like you and want to introduce you to other people?
I ask intelligent questions to them, unlike we're doing today. I am usually able to give them the feeling that, no, it's a dig on me, not him, that, you know, I know what I'm talking about.
They can spot her German work ethic pretty,
yeah, I guess
pretty
so.
Easily.
Yeah.
That's a
Diva will ask the questions here.
Okay,
you ask questions, and then, like, can you tell us a real story about, without mentioning any names, about when it worked out for you?
Sure. I went to one of these silly events last fall. It was.
It's not silly if it's making you money, Julia.
Hand
well,
negative.
I'm starting with my theory before I went. It was silly and early in the morning, and as you can tell, I'm not exactly a 7:30 in the morning kind of a girl. And I went to this. It was on emerging technology companies in the area, and it was filled with pariah-soaked vendors, no doubt about it, and they knew nothing about the technology sector. And, you know, I did. And so when they left out three or four of our largest technology companies, I mentioned it. Next thing I know, the person who's doing it is coming over and asking me if I'll go to lunch with her. And then next thing I know, you know, she's introducing me to five other startup companies in the area and getting two calls a month for people who can't staff up their companies appropriately.
Who paid for that lunch?
That was a freebie.
Okay.
The chamber. That's a chamber event.
Let's go to the couch. I want you to be happy. There's people who called in just to listen to you. Let's see who they are. Maureen Sherb, the Queen Bee of Telephone Sourcing. Are you still here? No. Okay. She's on the line, but she's away from the phone. Okay.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay. You are really.
I had it on mute.
You're pretending you're listening to. Okay, fine. Okay. Do you want to say hi to Julia? Have you ever
Julia.
Met Julia?
Hey, Julia.
Maureen.
Make her feel at home. She doesn't feel happy here, I can tell.
What's the matter, Julia? Are they being mean to you?
She got up early.
As nice as can be.
Let her talk, animal.
It's like an awkward first date is what it's like, Maureen.
Oh, I didn't know you were so shy.
I'm not.
Area code 718.
Animal, be nicer to her.
Who are you? 718. Come on. Speak up.
They
don't speak
up.
Okay.
Dave Manister.
Dave Manister is 718 now?
Yes,
Dave,
sir.
Hey, thanks.
David Manister, the kingfish of ERE. He
Did
used
you
to be area
Staten
code
Island?
212.
That's
I grew up in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Okay. That's it, Dave. You have anything else to say to Julia?
Hi, Julia. Long time no see.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, area code 260. That's Jerry Albright, purplesummary.com.
Hi.
Do you have anything to ask Julia? You guys obviously have good conversations on your own when there's nobody around.
Private.
Do you want to take over for a little? Do you want to ask her something?
When it's private.
What's so private? She came on the show.
Hi, Julia. How's it going?
Show. Area code 314. You want to say hi to Julia?
Leise zieht der Schmein gemüt.
Oh, that's our friend Jimmy Durbin. Julia, he's a mover and a shaker, a smart guy. I hear Obama is going to, when he wants to get the guys who think differently than him, Jimmy's the guy from St. Louis that they're going to call. Socialmediaheadhunter.com, area code 509. Want to say hi?
Sure. Hey, Julia.
Who's that?
It's Jeremy Langham.
Jeremy Langham. Okay. Do you call yourself Lingham? Isn't that one of those things they have in India, those statues?
Nope. Langham. Oh.
Langens. Okay, right. Okay.
Langham.
Are you still looking for a job?
We'll see. I've got an offer right now, so we'll see if I accept it.
Ex-Cisco Internet Sourcer, Jeremy Langens. Do you have a website now, Jeremy?
I just promote the sourcecon.ning.com.
Okay. Final name, area code 815. Do you want to say hello?
Hello. Steve Delaney.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Do you have a website?
Just a LinkedIn site or Twitter. S.J. Delaney on Twitter.
Okay, S.J. Delaney on Twitter, and you're a recruiter, right?
That's right.
What city are you in? Does it matter?
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Oh, yeah, you sent me that Chicagoland stuff. Julia?
Yes.
You went to you're still here, right?
I'm right here.
You went to Woodruff High School, didn't you?
That's correct.
Now, which
like
Woodruff
James
High School is that?
What?
Which
I didn't hear a word you said.
I didn't hear either. Which Woodruff High School is that? Where is that? In Chicago or Missouri?
That's in Peoria,
or?
Illinois, and there are
that's
them in the country, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few of them. And why did you go to school then, in university to Missouri, Truman State?
I went there on music scholarships and academic scholarships. They offered me a free ride, so I went there.
Yeah, I noticed you were in the choir, right?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, we often sing here, you know, I guess. That's a yes or no answer. We often sing here, and, you know, the Beatles have a very nice song called Julia. Does anybody want to sing that song with me?
Let's do it. I'll do it with you.
Okay. All right. Julia, are you in on this? You can lead. You're the singer.
I'm so out of here.
Anybody else? Half of what I say is meaningless. That's what it sounds like to me. You know,
I don't know that song.
But
is that how it goes?
He's making up the words just for
Beatles
me.
Song.
Julia.
Julia.
Okay, forget it. Okay. You know,
when you thought it couldn't get worse.
Yeah, okay. So your pet peeve, Julia, is a lack of feedback from candidates. What does that mean?
A lack of feedback to candidates. To candidates, not from candidates. I don't think that our industry has gotten a terrible reputation by not giving candidates feedback as a whole, and I think it probably stems more from corporate recruiting and then has gotten systemic all the way down.
Okay, so what would you base that on? Sorry, I'm just going to ask her, can you give us an example, Julia? The name of the game of this show is you say something, you back it up. You say something, you back it up.
Really? Okay, I'll try this. How many people who are on the show today have never talked to a candidate who said, I talked to that client, but they never got back to me? Is there anyone who's never heard that?
Yeah, I don't get back to people.
Well, then you're part of the problem.
I guess I am. Okay. Okay, fine. Okay, so you get complaints from your candidates that they're not all
I think there's different levels of respect that go along with it. I think if you send your resume to somebody and they send you an automated response back, that's fine. I think if you interview with somebody, you probably deserve a personal email or a personal call back. I think that there are different levels. It's kind of like dating, you know. You can dump a first date over the phone or just not call them, but you really can't do that with a fiancé without getting in a lot of trouble.
You're married, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm married.
Hey, Animal, this is Jeremy. Can I ask Julia a question?
Go ahead, please.
Okay, great. Hey, Julia, do you think the root of the problem is the hiring managers not wanting to put any specific feedback at the recruiter, and so therefore the recruiter doesn't really have anything to say to the candidate?
That's hard, and it certainly probably doesn't help. I have to give feedback all the time where I have no real information other than no. I think another piece that probably plays into that is the managers are afraid of saying no because they don't have somebody who said yes yet. So they won't just tell you, no, there's no way I would hire this person, because they're always thinking, what if? What if my top five people fall through?
Right.
Maybe I'll need that person. And I don't think they realize that they're inadvertently making up the mind of the people and making it up in a very negative way.
So my follow-up question would be, how do you keep a candidate warm and make sure they have a good candidate experience when you have no feedback to give them except for, you know, sit tight and wait?
Well, I think, it's a tough problem. I think part of the systemic problem is that the internal recruiters generally are forced to work too many orders to do feedback effectively. But I also think that what I will do is tell people, I can't do that. So you can why don't you contact me once every week or every other week? I'll tell you if there's any movement, but feel free to contact me and put the onus on them. I think that's fine, but people just ignore them. And then they get very disgruntled and angry. And when I'm the next person who picks up the phone, I get an earful from every candidate.
Great.
Yeah, you know what? I have a follow-up question for what Jeremy's asking. If you have to turn a candidate off, how much information do you give them? Some people say, I don't say anything. I just tell them that's, you know, between me and the client. I can't reveal it. Sometimes if they know their field well, they can explain to the candidate exactly what they're missing. What do you do?
It really depends on the candidate. I do a lot more personalized search. I do I get to know my candidates a lot better because there are a lot fewer of them at the level I play at. which tends to be highly technical or, you know, management jobs within technology companies in that kind of sector. There just aren't as many people. So it depends on two things. One is it a personal issue? If it's a personal issue, I tend to shy away from telling them. Like, you had body odor in the interview. I mean, unless I think they're going to listen to it and correct the action, I'm probably just going to tell them I don't know why they were declined.
Really? And they never challenge you on that? You just say, geez, I don't know why they pick somebody else. Is that what you actually say? Because it's a pretty transparent lie.
I would say about 9 times out of 10, I get the feedback of we're going to pass on this candidate or the position's closed. And so you don't have a lot of feedback. I don't know. People, I think, on the other side are also scared of giving direct feedback. I think everybody's afraid of being sued these days.
Then you're not doing your job, Julia.
Well, maybe, but you know what? There's
you should know why your candidate is ruled out for a fact every time.
That's true.
And it's up to you whether you want to tell the guy that, hey, they just didn't like you. But usually that's the case. It's usually because they just don't like the guy or gal.
That's right.
So it's not usually a technical, hey, you didn't have X, Y, and half of Z. It's they didn't like you. So I just say there just wasn't really a fit there with the team, and they know that.
Is that what you say? That's your code term, Jerry? There wasn't.
No, I don't use code term. I do my best to tell them as close as I can. Other than they didn't hire you because
they don't like your personality.
Yeah, I mean.
You tell them that.
No, I just say that there wasn't really a fit with the team or something.
That's a code term. It's not clear. It's not clear what that means. Like, you didn't have enough personal energy.
Well,
you didn't have pep. You seemed like a downer. You don't tell them the straight goods either.
Well,
you're putting Julia down, but in the meantime.
No, hold on. No, I'm not putting Julia down. I know why my guy is ruled out.
Okay, but you don't pass it on to him.
If I can, sure. What are you trying to tell me that I'm saying?
You're saying Julia doesn't say at all why they're ruled out, and you give them sort of half the story.
My concern with Julia was that she doesn't – she probably misspoke when she said usually she doesn't know why.
I think you're right, because she has to know. Otherwise, she won't know what she's looking for, right?
Yeah, exactly. So she knows, and whether she wants to choose to tell the candidate or not is her own personal decision. But I try to tell the people. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Because they'll get offended, and they can't handle it.
They get offended. They didn't get the job. That's the worst part, not knowing why they didn't get it.
Yeah, but they don't really want to know.
Sure they want to know. That's absurd.
Not talking high level. Medium level people, a lot of them have no clue why they didn't get it. Or they know, and they're not about to admit it to you. When you place project managers or business analysts, and you're interviewing with them, and you find out some stupid thing they did, like start chatting about compensation or how much they hated their boss, which they never tell you they did in the interview, they know the answer.
Your client would tell you that.
No, they go, well, what else can we do? I mean, they just want a job. They're not interested in what they did wrong. They just want to be given a job. That's the final thing. It's all they care about. And if you give them any good information, chances are you won't be sued, but you'll certainly piss them off because you're stopping.
Are you serious here?
I'm dead serious.
That people don't want to know why they didn't get a job, and if you do tell them why they didn't get the job, they'll just be pissed.
Not when they were just turned down. Down the road, they'll go, sure. And they'll tell you they want
that. They deserve the job.
Maybe Julia should be able to say something to you guys.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
I think you both have some truth, and I seriously sit down and try and evaluate, is this candidate going to hear what I'm saying, and will it help them in their next job search? And if it will, I tell them as much as I can. If it won't, I don't, because there are people who get vindictive, who blame you for not presenting them, and you know they somehow blame you for the problems that they're experiencing, and they're usually personality disorder type problems.
I guess
that's
I'm
like
lucky. I've never had anybody get vindictive or pissed off at me because I gave them the real reason they didn't get the job.
Do you work with pretty high caliber clients?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean, high-caliber clients?
Part of it is who they are, too, how sophisticated they are, and the levels that they're at. But even then, the bigger guys still have issues. It's like telling somebody you don't want to date them when they want to know why. They don't really want to know why. They're hurt. They're striking out with an emotional reaction, which is, I didn't get the job, I didn't get the girl, I didn't get the guy. And the last thing they want to be told is, well, your feet stink, that's why.
Well, but it's not that their feet stink. It's that their salary was $10,000 outside of the range. or it's the fact that, hey, they did give you a shot at the interview, but the HR person says that you have to have a degree no matter what. There are usually pretty specific reasons that you
can pass on.
Okay,
we're talking about the personal things. We're talking. Okay, fine. I think we covered this. Thank you very, very much. Interesting conversation. Julia.
Can I throw in something, Animal?
Oh, go ahead. You're the guest.
There's another spot in this that I'm curious what people think about, because there are times when you interview people, and I want to get feedback from you guys on this, when they are qualified on paper and they are terrible candidates, and you know it when you're interviewing them, and you know they look good enough on paper, do you tell them you're submitting them anyway, or do you just tell them?
I personally have problems with that. Personally, guy sounds like a terrible wimp. And how are you going to tell them that they don't want them? That's exactly what I was asking you. He's got a terrible personal presentation, even though on paper, looks good.
So what do you do? I struggle with this every day.
I don't phone them back. Go ahead, Jerry. You tell her. Jim, you tell her.
I'm not sure of the question. Do you tell somebody that you're going to introduce them to a position if you're not?
Yeah.
Of course
not. On paper, they're good. But there's something wrong with them. So do you tell them, you're a creep or what? Like, what do you do?
I just tell
them. Well, that's an interesting question.
That doesn't make any sense, Animal. Why would you lie to them?
Because they can't.
So that they don't go around your back and submit by somebody else, perhaps? So that they don't submit directly? I've seen people do these things. I don't condone the behavior. I'm curious because it does put you in a bind sometimes.
I just don't tell them who the client is until I know who they are. I'm not a very good – it's been years since I had to do stuff like that. I've either worked on contract stuff, temporary staffing, or I know the managers here well enough that if someone goes around me, that candidate's deep six, so I'm not worried about it. But
when I was in IT, I had to work with some pretty creepy people, but they were geniuses, and they got hired.
Isn't that shocking? You're like, you got to be kidding me. Brown shoes with a black suit?
The man purse. Don't wear the man purse to the interview.
Okay. Why are you a smart recruiter? Okay? You said you're a smart recruiter because you know your limitations. What are they?
My limitations? I'm lacking in tact on occasion.
Yeah.
I can be too forward and tell too much information.
I tend
to overanalyze. I can be too thorough in preparation for things, which causes me not to do as many things as I should.
Okay, but you said you know your limitations and you never let them get in the way of succeeding. But in fact, all the questions you've been asking of the gallery here, the couch, are you don't sound like a forward person at all. It sounds like you don't want to give too much information to people who can't handle it. You're not sort of a I'm going to, lay it all out there kind of girl, are you?
Well, I've evolved. I mean, I've learned over the years that a little bit.
I mean, for the purpose of this show, I wish you were laying it out a little more. But anyway, anything else?
No, I like listening to the silence of your show ticking
away. Okay. You said you were worried I wouldn't give you a chance to talk. I can be as quiet as you want, okay? Now, what about pre-closing techniques? There was a great discussion about that. Becky Metcalf initiated it. I thought it was really good. Do you use pre-closing techniques?
Absolutely.
Want to tell us about the words that you use?
For pre-closing, it depends on the situation. Usually my people, when they go into an interview, they're 90% ready to take that opportunity. I mean, things can always fall apart in an in-person interview, but I've spent enough time discussing with them the clients, the concerns, the teams, that there's very the goals, the directions of the company, the management team, there's very little that's left up in the air. As a matter of fact, money, too. When Jerry was saying the pay rates were off by 10K, that never happens in my world because people are pre-closed on money. I am fanatical about it. One of my favorites, which doesn't always work, is to ask after an interview, can I accept the job on your behalf?
Every once in a while
I say yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, would you like me to accept it on your behalf if they call and extend it? That works better in contracting than it does in full-time positions.
Okay, so most of the time they say no, in other words. Is that right?
I wouldn't ask as much in a complex direct hire situation where I wouldn't know the salary, exact salary ahead of time. been in a contract.
I thought you closed on the salary. Didn't you say you close on all that stuff?
I do, but usually they have a salary range that with direct hire. I don't know anybody who works on an exact salary.
Now, what's direct hire? I don't know that term.
It's what you do.
What?
You don't
the recruiting
know
animals never heard of direct hire? Oh, God.
No. What does it mean?
I'm out.
Perm hiring?
Just regular recruiting
dependent.
As opposed to contract.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so she pretty
hiring.
Well contradicted what she just said. So she doesn't pre-close on salary with a regular unless it's a contract position. Am I right, Julia?
No, you are not right. They are pre-closed within the expressed range from the client, but that doesn't mean if
you
they
give
you a salary range of 65 to 72 that you know where it's going
to
come in within that range.
Did
and
you
I have said to people
65 to 72?
If it comes in at 65, well, usually it's 100, but if it comes in at 65, are you going to accept it? Because if not, I'm going to go back to them and make sure it's more.
Do you ever give them the range? Because that's the question.
No.
If you go 70,
no.
They always go, well, I'll take 70.
No, because they're always insulted by 65 if you give them the real range. They're always insulted by the low end of the range.
Yeah, they always think that you guaranteed them 70. That's what always bugs
yeah,
me.
Yeah, all they hear is the top end of the range if you give them a range.
And tell them it's like 23 to 70.
Now, has Jerry taught you? I mean, there's some people who said they're smart recruiters because they network with other recruiters. Did Jerry, you network with Jerry, you just said. Has he taught you anything?
Jerry, absolutely.
What?
Jerry gave me some good advice this year and to get back on my horse and start back into contracting more, which is something I have a lot more experience in than direct hire search.
Oh, really? And what was the logic there? Why did he tell you to do that?
Because
and why was it a lesson to you? Why didn't you know that yourself? Why did you have to learn it from him?
Well, I think I got very focused on growing my business as a direct hire search firm. That's the niche that we were hitting.
She probably thought, if Jerry's actually making money doing this, why, certainly with my German work ethic, I can kick ass.
Ich wünsche Sie wäre der Rück zu der Hulu. Becoming.
So, yeah, good work on that, Julia.
Okay, so Jerry was talking to you, and he said, Julia, I'm making a ton of money on contract.
I did not
say that.
You
want to get back into it as well.
We're talking about a healthy blend of business and what's healthy, you know, and it made me think perhaps I was being a little too focused in my niche.
You learned anything from any other recruiters or just from Jerry?
I've learned from a lot of recruiters. I think you can learn. Go ahead.
Well, give us some examples.
Rayanne and I talk all the time about issues around the hiring process and, you know, where do things fall apart or where do they go right?
Is there a lesson that you've learned and used?
Yeah, there's a point in the recruiting process where your gut tells you something's wrong and you ignore it, and your gut is always right.
Give me an example.
Well, I had a high-level candidate, and this is just amazingly embarrassing. I had a high-level candidate who was into social media, and it was a social media company, and VP of sales and marketing. And she reached out to the hiring manager and linked into him before the interview, which is odd. It's a very odd thing. He didn't – and that was a warning bell. Yeah, exactly. A little warning bell. But he didn't tell me about it for a couple of days, and – in the meantime, she reached out to his boss, the CEO.
What does that mean? Sent an email or phone them? Reach
email,
out?
No, LinkedIn. LinkedIn, hey, best buds, love your photos, kind of, you know, can't wait to meet with you guys. You're really on track.
Let's party.
Is that terrible?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't really reaching out. It was a little contact, really.
Really? You think reaching out to the CEO of a company when you're interviewing with somebody who reports to him is not...
Okay, what happened?
What happened?
Yeah.
I got a bunch of expletives from the CEO of the company.
Yeah.
And, you know, asking what she was doing. And I knew. I knew as soon as he said, well, she reached out to me, but I didn't think twice about it. I thought I'd just let it slide, that she didn't understand social etiquette online, which is important in a social media company.
Uh-huh.
Do you think you can spot a psycho?
She was not a psycho. You know, that's the worst part. She was not one of those people. And since then, she's actually referred work to me with some people that she knows in other companies, which is so odd. I really am not sure how to deal with her other than I one or two word answers like, thanks.
Yeah. Do you think it's because she's a salesperson that she felt comfortable being direct?
I think it's a combination of being a salesperson who's a woman who tends to be a good-looking woman who sells through sex, to be honest with you.
Is she good-looking?
Yeah.
Do you have her picture? And for an example, for animal sight.
Just so we, you know, so we know
I'm
what
not
we're
posting
with.
Somebody's picture up of an interview gone horribly
awry. It would just help.
You know, by the way, Julia, your picture on LinkedIn, it's not a bad picture, but it's so dark you can barely see you. I never understand why people don't just brighten these pictures up a bit. I can do it for you if you want.
Hey,
you want
animal.
Yeah?
Why don't you put your picture on there and then start critiquing others?
I had my picture there.
You don't
okay.
have your picture there.
No, wait. If you listen to me for a sec. I had my picture there, but I like to have my email address there, and the picture cut off half the email. So I took it down.
Hmm. That's
okay?
an excuse for not having your picture up, I guess.
That's the truth. Now, Julia, how come your picture's so dark? Don't you think it makes a difference?
Well, I'm wondering if it's your eyes, because I'm not seeing anything wrong with my photo.
Well, maybe it's my screen then, okay? Other people
are you prepare. Are you approaching 50, perhaps? Is it the eyeballs, you know, loosen up as you get older?
You know what? Funny. I mean, I don't see everybody's pictures being dark, but there's lots of people who put up dark pictures. But
maybe it's my dark aura surrounding my
picture. Let's drop that. I have another question. You left a comment on Dave Mendoza's posting about Chris Hoyt, the recruiter guy. At the recruiter guy on Twitter, okay? Now, this guy, I want you other guys to listen to this. He was walking down the street. He looked in a shoe store, and he saw a girl trying on shoes. So he went in there to pick her up, and he kind of posed as a salesman and talked to her about shoes for an hour, and then apparently he had to say that he wasn't working there, but he did invite her out for a drink and eventually married her. Is that odd? Does anybody think that's odd?
That's awesome.
I would
it's
only
awesome.
Go to those links for new clients. I would never do that for a date.
Okay. Anybody? It is awesome. I agree. Does anybody find it odd? Or is it that the way?
Odd.
To this community? No, it's perfectly normal behavior
Jim?
For recruiters.
I once stopped a car. I was driving four people down to school. I stopped the car, pulled out my shoes, and started jogging along a pretty girl who was running along the road so I could take her out later on that evening. So I don't think it's that odd. I think it's a hunter mentality, and it's very good.
Okay. Did she go out with you?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not your wife, by the way.
No. No, but for her, I did.
Out later.
For my wife, I actually I pulled in, and I went, and I actually went running, and I ran around the block a couple times to work out a sweat and then popped into the gym so I could get the excuse of seeing her so I could ask her out for the next day. So
I see. Okay. So
that worked pretty well.
You're willing to push the envelope to meet girls and candidates, I assume. Julia said you do for candidates but not for guys. Okay, Julia, I'm going to give you a quote from Jerry Albright, since you like talking to him. He said, I can take a $50,000 punch in the stomach and get right back up. In this business, you must be able to rise above the daily ups and downs. One day, my spirit might be soaring with a few new placements ready to start, and the next day, they might both call with a change in plans. You need to rise above the money involved and realize that you cannot be in the recruiting profession without being hit by fall-offs, no starts, and offers turned down. Do you agree with that, or is it something, can you take a $50,000 punch in the stomach and get right back up?
You have to, or you burn out. It's just, it's too emotionally draining if you don't. And it's hard not to. You know, it is very hard not to. But
oh,
yeah,
it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts.
It's what I would call, it's your resiliency factor, the speed with which you can move on and learn from it and jump back in. And I used to have this happen all the time when I was working at a large contracting house in Seattle. They gave me the worst account. You know, nobody would touch it. And before I left, it was a $21 million account. But in those first 6 to 8 months, I had a 1,000-to-1 submittal ratio with this client.
Wow.
And it was terrible. And it was like, well, you know what? This is what I'm going to do while I'm waiting for my real clients to call back with offers. You know, I'm going to send out 20 or so submittals a day and see what they respond to, because clearly nobody has any idea. And sure enough, after one call, I mean, literally, it took less than a year for it to go crazy. But I didn't take it personally either way. I didn't take it personally when it jumped to an insane size, and I didn't take it that personally when nobody responded.
So what were you? What did you do personally, since you were involved, that made it grow? Well, how did you turn that client around, or did it have anything to do with your efforts?
I'm like a pit bull when I get a hold of a manager. You know, it was the first call we got, it immediately produced five contractors because, you know, you're meeting with him. He's like, hey, wait a minute. The guy next to me needs somebody and the guy next to him. And as soon as they see that you have the right people, I'm like, wait a minute. I'll tell you what, you guys are too busy. Let's book a conference room at the hotel across the street. You have no interruptions, no phones. Three of you sit down. You have 10 people go through here. You're going to hire five of them. I'll sign the paperwork outside. Let's be done. And they do it.
Yeah, but what were you saying at the beginning? Nothing was working with that company. How come? What made the transition from bad to good?
It was a typical black hole process. It was very early, before vendor management systems. And what happened was they would have you send everything directly through kind of an admin, but you were never given any manager names. You were never given any particular details. Every person had the same title. So you really didn't know what was going on in any individual project. It was literally like throwing darts blindfolded until you got one person in and started talking to one manager, and then they told you what the project was, and then you could fill it. But nobody else was going to take that amount of time to
break through. Okay, so you didn't bust the door down. You just sort of kept at it until you had an informant from within. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody else have a question for Julia right now? No? No? Is that a no?
No.
Okay, there's one new person. Let me just say. Area code 111. Do you want to say hi to Julia? No.
Hello, Julia.
Who is it?
Steve.
Julia. What, Julia?
Steve.
Is that Steve?
Hey, yes, it
the
could
gun
be.
Show.
It's me. The gun show, please.
Good thing I know all the area codes.
Okay. Do you
it's
have
amazing.
A
you, can be a, you can be a recruiter. You know all the area codes.
Yeah, 111. That's a real good area code. So do you have a question for Julia? Steve Levy.
No.
Okay.
Just want to say hi.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, Julia, you said you've never thought about recruiting as a real job, and you're amazed that people are going to pay you to do it. But everything you've told us today makes it sound like a real uphill battle for you.
No. I'm sorry if I gave you that impression. I think
Have you ever heard of Red Bull?
Or caffeine.
Yeah.
Caffeine, yeah.
Or whiskey.
Come on, you sound like you ran around the block before you got here. Give me something to work with.
Animal, I have a note for my husband on instant message saying, please don't cry.
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah.
No, it's going bad.
Dear Mr. Animal, please be kind to my wife today.
I know that he's listening. Usually the husband.
You know how I feel about women crying in the workplace. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They listen after the show. They don't listen while the wife is on. Give me a break. Well, maybe he should call in and, you know, get things
going.
Hey,
let me ask Steve something. Steve, what do you think when women cry in the workplace?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, why?
No, I can't. I mean, it's actually worse when men cry in the workplace.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that.
No, work out, Julia. You know, you had your gender
show.
I'm
drawing the line. You guys can talk about just about anything but crying on my show. You wait till your show, Maria.
Yeah, okay. No, Julia, come on. Now, if you said,
I'm going
to have to cut people off for you. Okay, so you said that it's so much fun that you're amazed people will pay you for it, right? But it sounds like very hard work.
Oh, no, it's not hard work. I mean, it's intuitive, and there are parts of it you can't teach people, and that's the hard part of it.
What parts are those?
You can't teach people to sense nuance in interviews. You can't teach them to hear.
But Julia, recruiters think they can sense nuances. They say that all the time. I have a sense for somebody.
Okay, I would like to say I sense sarcasm in your statement. See?
I it's not sarcasm. I think it's more reality because, I mean, I think I've been doing this for 20 years, and, you know, if I was really so good at sensing things, then my first marriage wouldn't have ended in a divorce.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but,
listen, we got Maureen on the line. She can sense everything that's going on in a company just from calling their phone banks, their data, their phone names directory. She'll tell you everything.
Bob, yeah, Bob the security guard.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's one story we've heard a few times. Okay, so Julia, what about client control? Is that an issue for you? Did we cover that already?
I don't know. It's
Can I ask something about nuance, Julia?
Of course.
Do you think that can be learned through experience? Maybe you can't teach it, but do you think people can learn it through experience?
You know, I don't. I think people either start their lives with it or don't ever have it. I don't think you can teach it. I've tried. I've tried. And things that seem so amazingly straightforward to me, they don't get.
Do you think it's related to empathy?
No. I don't think that.
Okay, Julia. Julia, you know, I don't know what's
with her. I'm
Maureen always wants to turn it into a therapy session or something like that.
Do you think it's related to the amount of estrogen or testosterone
in
one's bloodstream?
Yeah, okay. Hold on.
That
I've got
too?
Four questions. Let's wrap up with some questions. Now, Julia told me that she has a very she's got a pretty good overall business sense, and she considers that to be one of her strong points. What does that mean, Julia?
Logistically, I can figure out ways to make different scenarios work within the business. I can, you know, I had to do a bid once for between $2 and $4 million worth of business, and it was an online, like eBay style 30-minute bid where you had 12 different categories and had to adjust your pricing in all of them to come out on top. And it's fun. It's complicated, and you have to kind of know the numbers end of the business, and that's something I do pretty well.
Okay, so you understand the bottom line. Is that what you're saying? And you're good with arithmetic. Did you say that too?
I'm good at math.
Julia, do you have any down and dirty math formulas? Number formulas, you know.
Number formulas?
Yeah.
No, everything I know I learned on numbers, watching TV. No, I have no idea. I use Excel. What do you want to... Pretty simple. You know how to calculate gross profit? That's really the most important thing in our world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, somebody hang up on us. Maybe it's your husband. Still there, Julia?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Now, you said, how are you different? You said you have a very creative approach to business. You do things outside the norm. We're getting close to the end. Want to tell us what that means?
I have partnered with several people to help them pull in project-based work, because they've worked with me in the past or they've worked on projects for me in the past, and helped them put together complicated deals. I'm working on two or three of them at the moment even.
What does that mean? Can you be more specific?
Some people who used to do...
You hit the fat kitty cat for getting out of bed. Now you get
right... Oh, sorry, didn't hear you.
Yeah, okay. a few years back, somebody who had worked with me called and asked if I could put together a team to create a new payroll system for one of their clients.
Yep.
And I was able to pull in some really good developers who had gone out on their own, and they paid me a commission to help them pull the deal together and get some new business, and I helped them do a proposal, and then I got paid.
What was creative about that? Sorry.
What was creative about that?
Yeah.
Have you ever done it?
No.
Then I just think it's more creative than you.
Okay, Julia Stone, we have 1 minute left. Do you have anything final? Do you have a hot tip for recruiters that you'd like them to take away?
Just be prepared to make more calls, and you'll do okay in the next year, but you got to make a lot of calls right now.
What's a lot of calls, Julia? Be specific. You're a very abstract person. I never would have guessed it. You're up there like Susan Burns. You guys would have a great conversation.
Oh, we do.
Everything's up in the air. Way high above me.
That means be prepared for twice as many calls as you had to make last year to close every deal.
And what do you think? How many calls should a person be making a day?
It depends on you. I'm seeing about 50 calls a day here.
You're making 50 calls a day to candidates or clients or both?
Total.
Okay.
Are you connecting on 50? Are you connecting on 50?
No, but I connect on a lot more. I connect on at least 30.
Okay.
And then, you know, I spend too much time online to get much more done than that.
Yeah. Julia Stone, thank you for coming on. It's been fantastic. It's been a beautiful.
She was a beauty.